Hi, you're listening to Attention Please on Talking Stuff Network. I'm Vikram Mohan. We are recording this on 16th of June. So happy Father's Day to all the dads listening. And we've done several episodes on the eve of big events before the elections, various matches. And this is going to be one of those episodes where the events which are going to happen a few hours from now would probably end up dictating the entire podcast, or at least being a major part of the podcast. And personally, I have been trying to get excited about what might be the most boring World Cup ever. And I'm hoping that this match turns it around. So let's know more about this from our host. Hey, Arnab, welcome back.
Thank you.
Which Pakistan will show up today? The one that played England, or the one from the West Indies match?
I think that it will be... See, the thing is, the Pakistan that will show up today is going to be the same Pakistan that shows up every day. The thing with Pakistan is that they play, and I said this a long time ago when India lost to Pakistan in the ICC World Cup final, was that the main thing about Pakistan's game now, this was not the case before when they had a genuinely good team, is that now with, let's say, the sharp fall in the quality of the Pakistan team, what they do nowadays, and I think this is the most effective strategy for them, is that they come out and play an extremely high-risk game. So this is the equivalent of basically driving drunk without seatbelts and with the brake fluid gone. So that's the way they play nowadays. Now, given that, it is most likely that you're going to lose. In 10 games, you're going to lose 8 of them. But then there is the chance that you'll win 2. There's a good chance you'll win 2. Maybe you won't win 2. Maybe you'll lose all 10 of them. But because they play this high, because if you recall the last time during the ICC Champions Trophy, they were blasted out in the first game they played against us. That was when they tried to play conventional cricket. If they play conventional cricket, if they just like not lose wickets and then accelerate towards the end, they will lose against most sides and definitely against India. So this next time when they played, when Fakhar Zaman scored his century, they just went for broke. He was out on a no ball from Bumrah. So that's how the luck changes, right? It was like a centimeter call. So again, this is the way I hope that Pakistan plays tomorrow. And I think the Pakistan has been playing this World Cup. I have liked seeing Pakistan. I've liked seeing the way Pakistan have been playing this World Cup. Not so much their batting, because they're, other than Babar, who's a very classy player. I mean, there's so much Virat Kohli in the way he bats. Of course, he's not Virat Kohli. He's like a duplicate Shatrughan Sinha version with the cut on his lip. But he, again, I'm being a little dismissive of him. He's better than that. But other than him, I don't think there's anybody in the Pakistan lineup who would walk into a World 11. Yes.
In terms of strategy, what you're saying is essentially Pakistan is like the current England team, but minus the talent.
So they have to play like the England team. Exactly. So they have to. So England plays it. So that's a very good point. England plays like that because England knows that they have a team that can consistently play 2.5 T20 innings back to back and score at that rate. That if one fails, the other will pick up. All of them are individual T20 winners, in a way. And England have been blessed with a generation that can play cricket like this. This is unheard of. Pakistan don't have that. But what they do have is they have the roll of the die in their favor. And tomorrow, if there is rain, I'm saying tomorrow because I'm in the US and it's technically going to be tomorrow. Pakistan has a better chance that as the game shortens, and I believe that to be the case, that's why the better side wins in Test cricket. Is that as the horizon of the game lengthens, the better team has the advantage. And the shorter you make the game, it equalizes everything. So as the game tends towards the T20, Pakistan's chances become better. This kind of throw the bat at everything becomes better. I think, again, I'm not going to make any prediction about the Pakistan game because it's really risky to make predictions and you end up looking like Yogendra Yadav. So what I will do is, I think there's a high chance, I presume, that it might be washed out. So to paraphrase Ravi Shastri, in the end, the weather is the winner. But Of course, based on ability, there is no doubt India start out as favorite. So I was watching. One of my hobbies is to watch Pakistani television analyze cricket matches. I have two hobbies among many hobbies, but two of them. One of them is following BanglaCricket.com for beautiful discussions on cricket, especially when it relates to India. And another is watching Pakistani YouTube videos. Whether it be Veena Malik's exorcism. I just love watching Pakistani television, especially when they discuss India for reasons that are fairly obvious. So I love watching Shoaib Akhtar's. Shoaib Akhtar does this, I don't know if you've seen it, he does not a podcast, but basically like a podcast, except you can see him.
YouTube ones, right.
The YouTube ones. And I think they're fairly entertaining. I think they're good. Actually, Shoaib Akhtar, the thing I like about him is that he's fairly straightforward, and what you get is he's very unfiltered. So I like the way he speaks. He brings his Shoaib Akhtar attitude. So I've always admired Shoaib Akhtar. I mean, he's we'll come to that. He's the kind of Pakistani player who you love. You grow up like admiring and hating in equal measures, and you don't know which is which. So he's one of the last one of them, and. Unlike a few of the Pakistani players, you can see that he's worked on his English and his. And I think he said that once, that, he has actually worked on his English. He has worked on, his way of speaking. He has done that. I think he was saying somewhere that most Pakistanis don't do that. I've done that. And so he's actually stepped up his game. I think another guy who stepped up is Kapil Dev. I mean, he's much better now than he used to be. For those of us who grew up watching Kapil Dev talk, the Pawan Lift, the Jawab Nahi, from those days to. So there are a lot of people who've developed, but coming to it tomorrow, I think that Pakistan's best bet is, first of all, to just go for broke. I mean, if they lose by 120 runs, let them lose by 120 runs. If they lose by 8 wickets, let them lose by 8 wickets. It doesn't matter. But that is the only way they can defeat India. So it requires those kinds of players who have the go for broke attitude. That's why I think Fakhar Zaman, despite having an absolutely ordinary tournament so far, he is my man because he can play like that. I don't think Inzamam ul Haq's nephew can play like that. I don't think he can.
Somebody, in fact, made the point on Twitter, forgot who, that one thing which drives Pakistan, especially against India, is if they smell blood, if we show some kind of weakness, if we have a couple of, let's say quick dismissals and Pakistan smells a victory, that's it. That drives them. And you see the other Pakistan come through.
That might be true. I don't think it is. I think that was more likely before. I don't think that this Pakistani team, this generation of Pakistan, has that attitude. I just don't. I feel that they're not the Pakistan team that I grew up with, in terms of talent and in terms of attitude. But I think another second thing that I wanted to say was that it makes a lot of sense for Pakistan to play Hasnain. I don't know if have you ever heard of him?
First time hearing of him.
So Hasnain is this guy who he's in the World Cup team, but he hasn't played a single game. So he's one of those fast bowlers that they have, who's apparently very erratic. But he is the guy you want to put in a game like this. Nobody knows who he is. Like, people don't even know who they haven't even heard of his name. And on games like this, if you let India play in the way they have already decided they're going to play, they're going to win. So you have to throw in these X factors. So Hasnain can go for like 100 runs in 10 overs. That can definitely happen, and his career might be over tomorrow. That could be the case. But then that's the Ghatotkach gambit, right? When you send somebody in basically to die, but you know that what he's going in for is like a very high stakes thing, that even though he might die, they might get victory in the process. So that's the way you use people like, Hasnain. Because I think that last time we played, I think Wahab Riaz took 5 wickets once, if I'm not wrong. So these were all guys who were playing their first game. But people didn't know who they were. I don't think that any of the other Pakistani players have any element of surprise for the Indians. They have played them gazillion times before. I mean, whether it be Mohammad Amir, Wahab Riaz, I think that there's no surprise. And unless Pakistan can, last time Fakhar Zaman's innings was a surprise. So unless they are able to surprise India, So they have like played, they have people like Sohail Khan who came in and bowled. I mean, right. These people have had success primarily because of their novelty. The second game, they will not have it. They have their novelty. It's the Henry, it's the Olonga kind of thing. You know, first time you play the guy, there's something special about him. And that itself, when you have somebody special, that you know, people panic a little bit. And that's all they need. They need just a few wickets to go. And India does have, they do have a soft core now with Dhawan gone.
Right.
I just don't think that if the ball swings around in the morning, that KL Rahul is going to survive long. If India gets to bat, and again, I'm making this prediction knowing fully well that KL Rahul might be making a century. But it is, again, in cricketing terms, it is unlikely that KL Rahul is going to be a like-for-like replacement of Shikhar Dhawan, given the fact that Shikhar Dhawan, again, was in supreme form in that game against Australia. He was, like, at his best. Right. Well, I don't know what happens to him in ICC tournaments, but he just like, really steps up his game. And his loss is a huge, huge loss for India.
Coming back to Pakistan for a second, I wanted to ask you this. Yeah. I mean, even on this podcast and everywhere, a lot has been spoken about the impact IPL has had on our international journey, but what about PSL? I mean, what, it's been two years or 3 years of PSL now?
Yes.
So have any I forgot the name of the bowler you just mentioned. Are they PSL stars? How did they come about?
Yeah. So like Shaheen Afridi is a PSL star. He came up in PSL. I watched him bowl in PSL. He's had a rough time recently. But in PSL, he was fairly good in PSL. So I think that there's this, bad with names, this is Ali something, Azhar, okay. Not Azhar Ali, some other Ali who can't make runs for, he's like Yusuf Pathan in PSL. he's the guy who bats four and never gets any runs here. So PSL is good. I mean, I think I watched some PSL games, and again, PSL isn't IPL in terms of standards. It's just not. It's like it's like comparing Avengers to a Bhojpuri movie. Right? I mean, both are movies, but there is this.
But really, is the difference that stark?
Yeah, the difference is the difference is stark, because it's just, you know, it's so the players there don't put their best foot forward. Okay, so if you watch Andre Russell in PSL, he's very different from the Andre Russell who plays for IPL, or who actually plays for CPL. In CPL, he puts in much more effort. In IPL, he puts in much more effort. In PSL, all these games, I get the feeling that many of those guys are just taking their paycheck and they're just there, you know, you've paid me this much, this is how much I'm going to play.
Itna paisa mein itna hi milega.
Itna paisa mein itna hi milega. Okay, so you can see that. So the Pakistani players, of course, try their best, and they're the second rung of IPL. PSL guys who don't get a chance to play in IPL, like, you know, the Afghan people, you know, the Afghan batsmen, for instance, and they try their best. And so the standard is bad, because I also think that in a way it's not just about them. I mean, it's bad because there are not a lot of great international players. The Australians don't participate in it. The Indians are not there. Even the South Africans that are there, they're all people who don't generally. They're not generally in the first 11. You wouldn't find a Rabada playing there. ABDV now plays, of course, because he's retired, but you wouldn't find Faf or anybody. So it's never the West Indians, of course, a lot of them play, but West Indians don't play for their country. So they play for anybody else other than their own country. But again, I don't think that like Shea Hope or any of the new stars play those games. So their standards are really down. Their standards are nowhere compared to IPL. The grounds aren't that great. You can't dive that much. And it's the Pakistanis. In IPL, I think even now, at least, the first 11 of all teams are pretty good. You've heard all of their names. Usually very few unknown players. But PSL has three or four players you've never heard of, always. They have people from Ireland. They have but PSL has helped them in a certain way. It's definitely, I think the Pakistan team now is slightly better than the Pakistan team they had in 2014, for instance. Right. But let's see again. But the thing about Pakistan, this cricket, and this is what I wanted to talk about more, is it's like when I, it's perhaps a function of my age, but when I watch Pakistan cricket, I don't really watch the game today. It's like a time capsule. It's like some kind of time warp which takes me back to my childhood when India-Pakistan games had a lot of meaning. And there was not a lot of things that were going on in those days. There was not the weekly diversion or the daily diversion of Arnab Goswami shouting on television. There was just not a lot of excitement going on. And there was no reality shows. It was basically Krishi Darshan and Rajiv Gandhi inaugurating this and Rajiv Gandhi inaugurating that. So there was not a lot of action going on television. And this India-Pakistan game was the closest we had to Big Boss in terms of, that level of drama. Javed Miada jumping up and down, serious drama. And we grew up watching us being defeated again and again and again. Getting beaten by Pakistan was the default. We would mostly get beaten. And that was because Pakistan just had a better team. They had a better team because they were more talented. They had the better bowlers. They were fitter than us. They looked fitter. So other than Kapil Dev, most of the players, Gavaskar had a paunch all his life. Most of the players were either too thin or carried paunches. Pakistan, they looked much fitter. They were not a great fielding side, but when I say fitter, I mean they just had the stamina. To finish games. You could see that the Indians would just physically not be able to take it in the 95th over of a game in hot conditions. They would just wilt physically and Pakistan wouldn't. I think those were the things that made the difference. In game after game, Pakistan might get into trouble initially. So they always used to follow a script. Pakistan would start well, then in the middle overs, there would be a problem. They would either get out to Ravi Shastri or Maninder Singh or some kind of slow bowlers. And then at the end, some dude would come out and he would play like in those days, a run-a-ball innings was in today's time a 200 strike rate innings. So somebody would come and play in those days an Andre Russell kind of innings and win the game. And the reason why they could was that by that time, the Indian bowlers and fielders were just physically, you could see that physically they had just stepped down two or three notches. And over the years, what has been gratifying to see is that we are the generation which actually saw the Indian team rise. We saw over decades. This was not a slow process, but we saw Indians finally improving. We know that India is going to lose to, I think the turning point is World Cup 1996, when India physically, I believe, for the first time outlasted Pakistan. They physically outlasted Pakistan in the heat of Bangalore in that game. I think no Indian who lived through the 90s will ever forget two things. They won't forget cook, 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 cook when it starts, and they will not forget that game. Those two things define the 90s. So I don't think anybody will. And I think that if you write in history of India, if I ever do, and I want to at some point of time, once I return to writing, I want to write a pop culture history of India. So that is a significant moment, because from that time, and again, it would take a few more years for Sourav Ganguly to come in and for India's renaissance and then Dhoni. But that was the time where I believe that India started to believe. And it's coincidentally is also the game which was Javed Miada's last game. Is that then they started to believe that a generation ended on that day.
Was Salim Malik also, was that also his last match?
No, it wasn't his last match. He played after that, I think so. But their age was going, and this was Javed Miada's. After that we had, was it after or before? I'm sorry. Sourav Ganguly. Yeah, that was after. So there was Toronto and Salim Malik would play in Toronto, but India would win in Toronto. The Sahara series. India were at that point of time competing. India was definitely not the favorites, but we knew this was a marked departure from the early 90s. But in the mid 90s, we knew that, Pakistan would likely win, but there's a good chance that India might win. It's a good, very good chance that India might win. It's worth watching and not just to see how, by how many runs India lose. So things started getting better, progressively getting better. I think the next stage, and that's why World Cup games are so important, because I think they're kind of landmarks, India-Pakistan World Cup games. I think the first World Cup game that India ever played with Pakistan, which was 92 World Cup, was an aberration. It was an aberration and that India won. There was no reason why India should have won that game.
But Pakistan at that point of time was playing even worse than India. And then, of course, they stepped up magically. But and then 96, as I said, it's very significant. This was Miada's last game. And this was really the end of the Pakistan's. It was like the beginning of the end of Pakistan's golden era. And then 99, again, Pakistan had a very, very good team. But again, they lost to India. You could claim that Pakistan, as I remember during the toss, Akram said, we're treating this as a practice match or something, he said. And yes, they lost that game at the height of the Kargil war. Again, I'm pretty sure they were not taking it as a practice game. Knowing Wasim Akram, I think he was trying to make it easier for
his just players.
No, just to, I think he was just trying to, I mean, Wasim Akram isn't the kind of guy, I mean, if you hear him talk enough, he's not the kind of guy who likes to inflame passions. He never says anything even slightly provocative. I remember there's this lovely documentary on the India-Pakistan 99 series, which is on YouTube. I recommend those of you who haven't seen it to see it. So it's lovely because they, you know, again, that's a defining series for those of us who grew up in the 90s as a test series. This was where Shoaib Akhtar came out and bowled those two deliveries, which announced his arrival on the world stage. But there's this interviews with Akram, and you know, see Akram even in those when he's like playing, he comes across as extremely diplomatic. Even when he talks as a captain, he's playing in those days, and he's extremely diplomatic. You know, like Imran, he's an extreme. He does not make provocative comments, unlike Miadad and all these other people. So, I think he was at that point of trying to. He was not trying to provoke India. Trying to, he was just trying to make it easier for his team, so that they at least don't think this is a matter of life and death. That's at least the way I would like to interpret it. Again. For the record, I'm a huge fan of Wasim Akram, by the way, so I might be a little biased. Then, of course, 2003 was really the game which firmly established that Pakistan was on the way out. That the golden age, so 96 was the golden age was starting to end. In 2003, that was the golden age has ended. It was, Shoaib Akhtar was at his peak, but Wasim and Waqar were on the way out at that point of time. And this was the time where Pakistan's bowling was ending. This was Sir Clain also had, you know, Sir Clain was also in 2005, Sehwag just took him apart. So Sir Clain also was going down. Their best pace bowlers were going down. And that, I remember watching that game in 2003 with the mixed group of Indians and Pakistanis. I was doing my PhD in Stony Brook then. Man, it was some experience. It's one experience watching it in your own room with nobody else, and it's another thing watching it with like 60 Indians and 5 Pakistanis. And all these Pakistanis were like painted with the Pakistan colors. And I remember them cheering loudly in this room where 75 people, when Sachin got injured in that game. And then, of course, once India won, man. Well, I remember one of those Pakistani guys started crying, and we were... You started crying not because of what he was seeing on the television, but of what he was hearing in that room. But you know, that was exciting, and that people can say whatever they want about Sachin, and you know, he doesn't play in the games that matter. I don't know, man. I can't believe that game mattered. Okay, and that innings that he played in that game, where went out again.
Oh yeah.
That day itself, Sachin kind of did the exact same thing that I'm asking Pakistan to do. He came out and played a very high-risk game. Like, he knew that, and he tried that in the final two, and it just didn't work because McGrath got him out. And he was playing the exact same way that he started out by playing. He started out by basically essentially stamping his authority that I'm going to dominate. That's it. I'm just going to go hell for... And he tried it in the finals, and people will always criticize him for that. But I don't think he was just following what had worked for him in the Pakistan game. It just didn't pan out. Maybe because one of the reasons is that Glenn McGrath he's a different kind of bowler from the Pakistani bowlers. Pakistani bowlers are very attacking bowlers, and they have that whole Punjabi macho thing going on. So if they see that somebody is hitting them, they will try to bowl even faster to them. They'll try to bowl bouncers. They'll and that kind of plays into exactly what the batsman wants. Sachin wants them because he's enjoying the speed, he's enjoying the pace that he exactly wants him. So he has them in the palm of his hand. People like McGrath are a little different. They're much more strategic and smart. So they know exactly that he doesn't want to go where Sachin wants him to go. So there's a level of difference in the, I would say, the bowling intellect of the garden variety Shoaib Akhtars of the world. Again, Wasim Akram was like Glenn McGrath, but he was not at his best in 2003. He started playing in 1985. I remember in that Benson and Hedges tournament, that was the first time we had seen him. Again, this might be before many of our listeners, but in 85, when India won the Benson and Hedges Cup, the first game that India played, Wasim Akram came in to bowl and he just took out like two or three wickets instantly. And Azharuddin and Sunil Gavaskar was batting in the middle order at that time. So they kind of saved the game. And he was something else in those days. He was really fast.
Was it the Ravi Shastri tournament?
Yeah, this was the Ravi Shastri tournament. Ravi Shastri fell first. Yeah, and that was Akram at his, like, he was young, raw, and he was a raw pace. Then he changed. He became a more crafty bowler, and you know, his best times were, I would say, 99 was, I think, the high watermark of his career around that. You know, the 99 World Cup in England, I think he was at his best around that time. 2003, he was on his way out. I think that was his last year. And then, of course, India played Pakistan again in 2011. And by that time, things had changed. History had changed. It was the first game I remember where India went in as the firm favorites. And I don't know what happened. And I think Pakistan will never forget that DRS decision of Sachin. If you remember that Syed Ajmal decision. But again, the fact that I am talking about these things so many years after it's happened shows you the significance of an India-Pakistan game. Now, a few months ago, I said that I didn't want this India-Pakistan game to happen, and I still don't. I still feel that given the political tensions and given what was going on between us, I think it would have been a politically great gesture to the world if India had refused to play Pakistan in this game, as many people had done. But now that we have, and I knew when I was saying this, that was not going to happen because the amount of money that is going to be made from this is just way too much. I mean, principle and everything are all good, but not when there are 1 billion viewers who are going to watch it. Right? So, you know, that's just too much money on the other side. So I'm no Boy Scout, so I know what that means. So, but it's also true that having grown up watching and really admiring Pakistan cricket, I do not... For those of you who know my political inclinations, I do not admire Pakistan in terms of its political interactions with India. To put it mildly, I have never been an Aman Ki Asha person. But that does not prevent me from admiring Pakistani cricket, as a lover of cricket, from admiring the talent and the passion that they bring to the game. I've always admired that in their players. Wasim Akram has been by far my favorite cricketer ever in terms of not just his bowling, but the way he carried himself on the field. You know, I feel that he could have made millions in this day and age in the T20 cricket. Given the kind of bowling he does, it'd be absolutely impossible to score off Wasim Akram if he unleashed those Yorkers. And he was... In EC Malinga, he's nowhere compared to what Akram could do. And Akram had so many other things. He had the slower bouncer, faster bouncer, gazillion number of... And on top of it, he would have been a... You know, in one day, he was sometimes exposed because of 50 overs. But in 20 overs, his batting was also amazing. He could bat like Andre Russell, if you wanted. So
in the World Cup, where, you know, the one which Pakistan won, in the finals against Australia...
In the finals, Pakistan won against England. That was the final.
Right. So, and my entire family, all of us were cheering Pakistan right from the start of the game. So.
Well, I think we understand. It's very difficult for us to cheer for England, especially to cheer for that England. I mean, any England which is led by Graham Gooch, it's just very difficult for anybody to say that we want that guy to win.
Yeah, it was very, you know, Manmohan Desai Mard kind of English. Where
it was a very Manmohan Singh game. It was a very Manmohan Singh team, that England team. I mean, who are you going to get passionate about? I mean, who? The only person who was moderately interested, at least you could watch him, was Alan Lamb. in that day. David Gower had retired by that time, so there was not even any grace in that side. It was Chris Lewis, for crying out loud. I mean, he was their best all-rounder. This was, again, it's a travesty that that side even went to the finals. And it's very good that they lost. Again, Pakistan winning the World Cup was very important for world cricket, and England consistently losing the World Cup was also very important for
absolutely
world cricket.
Yeah.
But again, the significance, and I don't really care what happens tomorrow, right? But the fact is that India-Pakistan games are unique. And I like the fact that because of politics, we don't play them too often. I think one of the things is we, in this day and age, the reason why cricket has, at least for me, has become just a continuum. There is nothing, there are no milestones in cricket anymore. Nothing sticks to my mind. It's just because there's so much of it nowadays. It's just become one endless India-Sri Lanka series, which just goes on and on and on and on. You just cannot distinguish between them. There's no significance. There is no importance. There's nothing to go by. But in those days when cricket was less, you didn't play so many games, things mattered. And because of political reasons, since we do not play Pakistan at all nowadays, you know, the games that we have now, ironically, they do matter. I'm embarrassed by the, I mean, people call me jingoistic, and I don't think that people should not stand up for the flag, that in India is considered to be jingoistic. But I really find some of the television programs, I mean, I love Pakistan's television programs being ultra jingoistic as long as there's no Indian involved there. But then I am embarrassed to see all these, you know, rent and experts who then go on to these Pakistani shows and they just play into the whole Pakistani taunting, baiting thing. It's just unbelievable. I mean, it's so juvenile. And everybody knows that there's a rivalry. Everybody knows the pressure. Everybody knows what's going inside. But I just feel that this, whether it be that advertisement, whether it be Mauka Mauka, whether it be, I mean, the line has to be drawn. In Pakistan, of course, like Pakistan crosses the line by bringing in war and, you know, the chai ad. I don't know, have you seen that ad?
Yeah, cringeworthy, but honestly, I hated even the Indian Mauka ad.
But there's, at least it doesn't go and say, I mean, at least it doesn't have a picture of General Niazi signing the Declaration of Surrender in Dhaka and say, and you're interposing that with a picture of Inzamam losing the game. I mean, there's a difference, right? There's a difference when you keep it to just cricket and when you bring in something like this. I mean, you just basically cross a line. And you can say that Mauka Mauka itself had crossed a line. And I understand that once you cross one line, what's the problem with crossing another? I totally get that. So I just believe that this jingoism, and I understand that with the India-Pakistan, this is the reason why this game is happening. Because this game is a friggin' money machine. And this money machine is going to end tomorrow, but it's been going on for a while. I mean, this is a gift which keeps on giving. And if India and Pakistan meet again in the semifinals, inshallah, given the amount of money that people will make, this will definitely go on. So in conclusion, unfortunately, you'll possibly be hearing this after the game is finished. So I'm going to predict it for India because, of course, my heart wants it to be India. They're the better team. But in the absence of Dhawan and given rain, I don't know. I think it's 60-40 in India's favor. I would have called it 80-20.
I'm going to ask you to make one more prediction. Yes. Since I assume you're going to watch this on Hotstar, the top right, they show the number of viewers. And typically, I think for the India-Australia match, it was close to 10 million. And for a good IPL match, I think it's typically 5 million. So you want to throw out a number? Do you expect to see 15?
10, 12.
Australia was 10. 12. Shouldn't this be significantly more than that?
I don't know if, honestly speaking, I can't think of another million people who wouldn't watch an India-Australia game and watch Pakistan game. I don't think that India-Pakistan is pretty, India-Australia is pretty marquee also.
Yes.
So
yes,
I just don't think there's a 1 million increment for this game. I don't think there's a 1 million
number.
It's happening on a Sunday, so there might be a boost because of that.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
But again, I believe that if it's a Sunday, then many people might want to watch it on television. And the people who were watching it in the game, on the computer in Hotstar might be watching it from office. Because, you know, of course, the internet is being paid by the office.
That's a good point.
So I think that there might be, again, then I don't think the numbers will be radically different because of that.
All right. From one bipolar team, I think you have something else now.
Yeah. So the last item that I want to discuss today, like how could I not discuss it, was Mamata Banerjee versus the doctors. Now, Mamata Banerjee has always had a tenuous relationship with the word doctor, having apparently gotten a doctorate herself over correspondence at what point of time from East Georgia University. But this one was pretty serious. For those of you who haven't been following, there was a mob of an 85-year-old, and this is important, because this was the reason why Mamata Banerjee was not on the side of doctors, was because it was a Muslim man and there was a Muslim mob which came there. An 85-year-old man died. And the mob decided that they will vandalize the hospital and beat up the doctors. And they beat up a doctor so bad that, you know, his skull has been cracked. And I don't know what his current state is. Some places he's in coma. I don't know what it is. But I heard somebody saying that even if he recovers, he will never be able to perform some of the body functions that, you know, he's not going to become a doctor anymore, because he's going to struggle with some of his motor abilities for the rest of his life. Okay, so the point is, Mamata Banerjee had said after the elections that openly, and this is so nice about her, you know, that she's, you know, Shoaib Akhtar open, you know, unlike the wires and the prints of the world, she doesn't even feign to be, you know, fair, which is very good. So she said that I will pander to my Muslim vote base, because je golu doodh dey tar lathiyo khete hai, which is Bengali for the cow that gives you milk, you take some of its kicks on the chin. And this was again an example of that. So rather than, and again, our wise media mavens say that about when violence happens, where once when the victim is of one religion and the perpetrator is of another religion, that you shouldn't communalize the situation. There's only one situation in which you may communalize it, if the state actually comes out in support of the perpetrator because of the religion. This is a construct which has been made by this. So person of religion X does something bad to person of religion Y. Because of a reason which could be religion, could not be religion. Religion definitely contributed to it, but it is some other reason. In some cases, it's a cow smuggling, which you can say is religious, but you can also say, and we've discussed this before, also the anger against people who cannot enforce the law because the cops don't enforce the law. So that is there. So it's not just cow, it's even if you steal a television. Does anybody steal a television anymore? I don't know. I'm betraying my age when I say stealing television. stealing your iPhone. I'm pretty sure that, you know, the lynchings of thieves all over the place. And the cow is still a valued attribute. And then there happens to be religious significance to it too. So these kinds of violence, you can never say where the religion stops and where other things take over. But we are told at that point of time that, yeah, everything is religious. Everything is religious. It becomes religious when the government comes out in support of the perpetrators and not the victims. Well, this is the classical case of that. Then why is this not religious? But of course, given the prevalent media bias, you have barely see any discussion of the communal aspect of it. Now, I'm perfectly fine with don't discuss communal aspect of anything. That's perfectly fine. But be consistent about it. Don't then go and say, I'm ashamed in Devi's Thaan and everything and carry placards. Don't do that. Don't go and just, because you can, you know, you can do that and not be considered a phobe, because this is the way the rules have been written in our media space. I am always for consistency. Let's not talk about communalism. Let's not talk about identities. I am absolutely fine with that. Then just let's look at it as a crime by a mob on an individual. As I have repeatedly said, in this country, it is not Hindu khatre mein hai, it is not Muslim khatre mein hai. It is the individual khatre mein hai against the mob, against the powerful, against those that are backed by the state. And the state does not necessarily mean the BJP government at the center. In states, its police is a state matter. So in Bengal, it is Mamata Banerjee. This is that famous telegraph is against the state. No, telegraph isn't against the state. It's against the BJP government in Delhi, and they're a Calcutta-based newspaper. They absolutely suck up to the state, which is the Mamata Banerjee government. So I personally always interpret this as that. I do not think that much of the violence that happens in India is primarily religious in nature. It happens because of the fact that the individual is powerless in front of the law, while the group has all the power. So if an individual, you are always the victim. You will always find the law against you. But become part of a group, and whatever religion the group may be, you will find that you are protected from the law. You have the absolute immunity, the kind of immunity that politicians have. And in the course of your life, you kind of gotten on to the fact that as an individual, I'm a powerless person. But when I'm part of a group, I get power. I get the kind of power that makes me feel like a king. So this is exactly what works in, this is the psychology of mob violence. And whether it be a person beating up a pickpocket by tying him into a lamppost, or a Gaurakshak killing, or something like this. These are all manifestations of the exact same malaise. It is not a Hindu versus Muslim thing. It is not India is being torn asunder by religious conflicts. No, this has gone on forever. This has gone on forever. And shame on those who communalize this from both sides. Okay, because a part of the communalization is that when you communalize, whenever something happens where the identity of the communities is flipped, you tend to ignore those events. You tend to not cover those events because they get in the way of your story. That is why you find that this doctor's Andolan, the first part of it has been absolutely ignored by the Delhi media. It was big news in Calcutta, but imagine something like this. And in what is going on right now is that multiple hospitals, doctors are protesting and they are telling stories. And this is on a video of the state apparatus and gundas effectively intimidating, abusing, violence. There are reports of sexual violence too and harassment of women doctors. And this, imagine, if you will, something like this going on in a state like Uttar Pradesh, all over, that doctors are on strike and the state apparatus is trying to get them to work and using tactics which include allying themselves with non-state actors. How much outrage would there be in this country? How much of award wopsy would be going on right now? Well, in the defense of Bengal intellectuals, one noted individual, Aparna Sen, has come out in support of the doctors. She has not returned any awards, no award wopsy. She has said she will not take any further awards, which is a little less stringent. And in support of Aparna Sen, I also shall not take any offers, any awards from the federal government. Not that I'll be getting them or deserve them. But anyways, even the guys who have received the awards from the Bengal government haven't deserved them, actually. So that's a non-existent part. But anyways, I think I also in the future refuse to take any awards from the Bengal. But but at least I appreciate. And one thing that I have to, there's a lot of negative on all these liberals are silent, but there's some people in Bengal who have shown inordinate amount of courage to speak up. So it is important that we call them out. So the mayor of Calcutta, who's Muslim, his daughter came out and she said, I am a Trinamool Congress supporter. I'm a doctor. And I am saying this is condemnable, what Mamata Banerjee has done. It takes a lot of courage to come out when your dad is the mayor of Calcutta, to come out and say that. And we have to, we have to applaud that. I do. I mean, I call out craven Bengali intellectuals for their silence, but it's even more important to highlight those that are not doing so. And it is even more important in these days when identity politics has become such a huge part of who we are. And this, from both sides, is that, you know, her bravery, you know, to just to go out and make it Facebook posting, what else can she do? Then there is the Bengali popular actor Dev. He is a Trinamool Congress MP. And he also made a posting where he said, I support the doctors. And this is not something which should be happening again. Of course, he cannot criticize Mamata Banerjee. He didn't go to that extent that the mayor's daughter did. But it was very obvious that he was not supporting the Trinamool Congress main line. And many of Trinamool Congress's spokespersons, for instance, Derek O'Brien, my good friend, hasn't said anything. So there are many people who have fallen silent. There are many people who have explicitly come out and condemned Mamata Banerjee while being inside the Trinamool Congress. And we have to appreciate their bravery for doing so. Because she's not the most democratic person, to put it mildly. So she's not a kind of person who appreciates this level of dissent at this point of time. But she is basically, carte blanche said that all the doctors are in league with the BJP. Again, what the doctors are asking for is, we discussed this last time. So why is Mamata Banerjee doing this? One part of it is I don't think she's rationally thinking. But another thing, and this is the most disturbing, is that, you know, what Mamata Banerjee is doing isn't entirely unpopular in Bengal. There is a huge amount of animus against doctors. And unlike animus against religious groups, you can be an extremely secular person and also say that I hate doctors and I think they had it coming. Virtually everybody I've talked to has had a negative experience, including me, with doctors in India. And it is no secret that and the doctors have told me that yes, it is true that hospitals provide them with, you know, revenue targets. I mean, this is no way for the medical profession to work. However, that does not justify what is going on here. And bringing these things at this point of time, and some people do, you know, saying, "Oh, I totally condemn the action on the doctors," but it's important for us to understand that doctors are not, to quote a Bengali word, you know, dhoa tulshi pata, which is that they're not pure. Look at this. It doesn't matter at this point of time. Make that argument on other days. Because now when you do it, you basically sound as somebody saying, well, yeah, you know what? Shit happens. And it's time that they realized that, you know, sometimes, you know, you kill people to your negligence. Sometimes people come and kill you too. So, no. No, this is not the reaction. This is not the reaction right now. It doesn't matter. First of all, not all doctors do this. Second is that there are many, many doctors who work for people and who sacrifice their whole lives. And it's not just a money thing, that they genuinely do it from a sense of duty, from a sense of just being, you know, internalizing the mission of saving human beings. So this is one of the noblest professions. True, there are revenue targets. That's capitalism for you, unfortunately. And there are solutions for that. But not today. Not today. At this point of time, it's important for us to stand with doctors and realize that there are, you know, bad eggs among them. Just like that, there are bad eggs inside every religion. That's why there are bad eggs in every profession. There are bad eggs in engineering. I'm an engineer. The only reason why you don't see them is because normal human beings don't have contact with engineers. When an engineer does something bad or doesn't do their job properly, it's called a bug report in programming. You have bugs. Now, when you're a doctor, you don't get the privilege of just dismissing it by calling it a bug and then fixing it later and having a bug fix and a patch. Human beings can't be patched. So your errors have real-life consequences, real-life tragic consequences. And I totally understand. That's the reason why I could never become a doctor. I never wanted to become a doctor precisely because of that, because I could not live with the tension of knowing that a decision that I took might affect the life of someone else. I just cannot live with that. And that is because I'm not mentally strong enough. And I absolutely applaud and respect those who are able to take that decision day in and day out. And some people say that it leads to some kind of callousness. And maybe it does. I don't know. Maybe that's a topic for another day. But it's very, very important. And that this is the time to stand beside doctors. I mean, these are the guys who save our lives, man. Okay? So respect them. And we have to stand up against... If a doctor has done malpractice, then there are legal avenues. I mean, I'm all for having better malpractice laws. I'm all for having resolutions in courts. I'm all for having these things. But you cannot bash a doctor's skull in. The moment that has happened, any kind of but discussions should at least temporarily be thrown out the window. There is no but at this point of time. It is an attack on the very profession itself. Yes, I don't know what happened with that 85-year-old man, okay, but he was 85-year-old. And what there are systemic problems, right? It's all true, but now is not the time for discussing it. Now the time is to see why a democratically elected government, rather than committing to punish those that are accused of this dastardly act, is more concerned about intimidating law-abiding doctors. Why is that the case? And that is the concern. That is the problem here. That is, you know, whatever the doctors are or are not, that is secondary to why the elected state government is dealing with doctors in this manner. Is where was the security of the doctors when not only when that event happened, but when truck full of and Mamata Banerjee has gone on record saying she wants more Changra people to join the party. Changra in Bengali is effectively a Bengali for ruffian. Okay. She herself has asked in I don't know whether she was joking or what it was, but again, she's hardly a person of great humor. I mean, she doesn't make speeches with humor. I don't think she has a sense of humor in any shape or form. So I think that she means it literally. So when truckloads of her Changra cheles are showing up and the police are looking the other way or working with them, that is a matter for concern. And, you know, it's shame. It's a crying shame that that sections of our liberal media have chosen to be silent or kind of not give it the same kind of importance that they would give something much, much more minor in scale in Uttar Pradesh or in any other BJP state. Sorry, sirs and madams, but after this, you cannot pretend to be neutral. Thank you.
All right. So is that our show for today, Arnab?
That is our show for today. And before we conclude, I would again like to thank our new Patreon contributors, Ramya. Thank you, Gaurang. So thank you for your contributions to my Patreon. Again, for those of you who don't know, and I don't know why you don't know, because I've been saying this all the time, that I have a Patreon account, and the link will be below, where you can make a monthly contribution to support this podcast. And in any contribution that you make minus the cut that Patreon takes goes to me. So please consider being a monthly patron if you like this podcast. If you cannot make a contribution, that's also great. As long as you spread the word around, as if you tell everyone, as long as you rate this show, you know, be more than thankful. I mean, what I'm looking for right now, again, for those of you who are joining me late, the reason why I do this podcast is this might be a dream of mine, a pipe dream, but one day I want to expand this to become something a little bit more than just one guy at late at night on Saturday talking into a mic. I want this to become a media platform, a centrist media platform where all sides are accommodated, a safe place for opinions. But that needs money, that needs scaling up, that needs better production and more people to listen to. So that's the first thing. So the first thing that needs to happen in order for all the money things to fall into place is that we need to have a certain amount of listenership for those with bags of money to take us seriously, to say, okay, we have so many listeners. So do you want to reach out to these listeners? Now, you guys who are listening to this podcast are premium people, okay? Given, I think I know the age group of people who are listening. This is not, you know, a podcast which I believe, and we have no data as to who believes. I don't think there are a lot of like below 25s who are listening to it. So given my age and given my similes and metaphors and, you know, how I talk.
Not exactly
and,
a millennial.
Yeah, it's not really a millennial. But so you are the kind of people that advertisers really want to reach out to because you're at that stage where you have money to spend. So, but we need a sufficient number of you guys to then be able to go to somebody and say, look, we have this audience. And once we're able to do that, we can definitely move up after that. But it's important. It's this podcast is going to, this is what, the 45th episode, and we've missed a few episodes here and there. So it's almost going to be in a year. And so this is a time for that kind of reckoning. Okay, so where are we going? You know, year-end evaluation, the dreaded year-end evaluation as to where we want to move from here. What are our goals for next year? So please do consider that. Again, if you have any ideas, please send us a WhatsApp. If you have any ideas for monetization, for expansion, and I know many of you guys, you know, have a, you know, great ideas or could connect us with someone, please do write in to the WhatsApp group, or you can email me, and we're more than happy to have a conversation.
Okay, and I'm sorry, Arnab, we didn't, in fact, I forgot to remind you when we chatted before the show, but I hope I'm not springing this to you, but we will not have a show next week. We are off next week. But yeah, we will be back the week after that, unless some drastic events happen, which will force us to have a show. Let's see. Let's hope, you know, there's no meteor headed towards the earth. But I do want to remind you that we have a WhatsApp number that, and you can leave your questions for Arnab and your feedback. And the number is 96525-7883. That's 96525-STUFF, S-T-U-F-F. If you're outside India, add a +91 as a country code for India. And we also have WhatsApp Geeks, our tech podcast without the tech. And the new episode is out now. So look for WhatsApp Geeks wherever you're listening for to this on, or head over to anchor.fm/WUG. So any parting words of wisdom?
No, I just hope India wins today. It's still okay. Not today for me, but still tomorrow. But India wins the Pakistan game. And I just hope that it doesn't rain out. I mean, this is the crappiest thing. I'd rather prefer India losing than it being rained out.
Okay.
It's been just terrible that they have decided to do this without the buffer day, given the weather, given the fact that they are doing it in June and they're not doing it in August when the rains actually go down, because I think that's when they have their Ashes series. So it's pretty, if I'm not wrong. So it shows that what the England wants to prioritize. And I just think it's criminal that we are having this kind of important tournament at this time without any buffer days. Just outrageous.
Okay, hopefully, yeah. Inshallah, we'll see India victory. Thanks for coming.